This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning to all my friends and family and dogs and cats. Thank you so much for being here today. Lazarus, please don't chew the trash while I'm out. All right. Interesting topic today. Certainly one that's received a lot of mixed messages throughout the media. We are going to be talking about the Occupy Wall Street movement with some folks from the Occupy Charlottesville group that has been at Lee Park. Write down the phone number if you'd like to call. We'll be taking calls later in the hour, 979-0919. That's 979-0919. We also have the toll-free 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Let me thank the folks in Crozet's 1011 in the Valley, and let me also thank the folks at Dixon Disposal. Today's programming sponsored by them. When Dixon picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. Dixon also offers single stream recycling during regular pickup. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. For more information, it's DixonDisposal.com or call 434-978-2111. All right, let's jump right into things, introduce our guests, and get started. The Occupy Wall Street movement here in Charlottesville, Occupy Wall Street. Let me check all the dials and buttons and introduce everybody. Larry, how are you today?
Good. Glad to be here.
Thank you for coming on down to WNRN. Next over we have Zach. Zach, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing well. And Bailey.
Hi.
Thanks to everyone. It's a nice Sunday. Would you normally be at Lee Park?
Yes.
Everybody?
At least sometime today.
Well, I would be at home and then on my way to work.
On your way to work. So, Larry, have you spent, what percentage of time have you been at Lee Park during this movement?
I have spent the majority of my evenings for probably the last 3 weeks, every day, pretty much. Of course, I have several kids and a wife, so those are obligations that need to be met, too.
You know, one of the first things that people ask is, or say is, those who do not support the movement is, get a job. Does everybody have a job?
I do.
Yeah, I have a few jobs, actually.
I had two jobs that I left in order to do activism full-time at
really?
The beginning of this month, yeah.
And I don't
but
have a job.
I'm still picking up shifts every once in a while.
I'm here to support the conversation. And if people ask, do I have a job, the answer is no. So if you're looking to offer me a job, please give me a ring here at WNRN. Occupy Wall Street. Explain the 99%. It seems so easy and obvious, but I've run into conversation where people do not understand the 99%. Who wants to take that? Zach?
Yeah, I'll take it. So basically, it's kind of the breakdown of the American public. And it's sort of a quick and easy way to just separate the growing disparity between income and wealth in this country. And also just the power politics as well. So we're making sort of the argument that there's 1% of the population that makes, say, most of the wealth in this country and that also control the way that the rest of the people here live. They control Congress. They kind of, you know, use their money to influence those kind of things. Anyone else want to add, Larry?
Well, I think basically, the concept of the 99% really addresses, as Zach said, that disparity. There's really not an issue with wealth. The real issue is the economic power that's contained within that 1%. And that's where the real issues lie, is that it really tends to restrict a lot of the opportunities that people who are not as well off have. And because of the kind of favoritism that government tends to play their hand towards with regard to people who have a tremendous amount of economic power because of the wealth that they hold, you know, it just makes the situation even worse.
Well, and I think it's also important to point out that it's not just income wealth, it is resource wealth. If you look at the how corporations or people with lots of money can control all resources in the area and how that affects everybody else. Like if you look at coal mining towns in West Virginia and you have single families that are responsible for the degradation of an entire city's water supply, those are the kinds of things that we're talking about.
We are talking with Zach, Bailey, and Larry from the Charlottesville group for Occupy Wall Street. What is the proper phrase for that? Do I talk about Occupy Wall Street here in Charlottesville? Do you say Occupy Charlottesville because the majority of people are now familiar with the phrase Occupy and what that entails?
I think it's an Occupy movement.
Yeah, I mean, Occupy Wall Street started something. They instilled this idea and kind of labeled this feeling that many in the world have. And so it's kind of uniting each of us that has that sort of feeling. And it's through that name, Occupy.
Well, I don't think they necessarily started. They just brought it to America.
Yeah.
Well, tell me why... You know, I heard two different parts to the question about explaining the 99%. Some of it was wealth, some of it was power. So I don't understand why there is this huge rift amongst the 99% who don't agree with what the purpose is. If there are 99 people who don't have or have much less of the money and much less of the authority and power than this one other person into what is being done for the entire 100 as a whole, why are 50 or 45 of those 99 people complaining about what the rest of those 99 are attempting to do for the group as a whole?
Yeah, so I think one aspect of that question is if you see that the particular individuals and groups that are in the 1%, they are spending quite a lot of money on disseminating a particular perspective on information. And I think that in this kind of day and age, people are so busy and there's so many complexities that it's very difficult to kind of keep your head on what's actually true. And so many people are just operating off the information that they may have gotten from some resource that may not be exactly what's going on or may be skewed and slid away. And I think that may account for some of it.
Rick Moore here, talking with folks from the Occupy movement in the Charlottesville group here on Wake Up Call. You know, and that was Zach. I would disagree with that a little bit. And again, the purpose, as I told the three of you and I want to tell all the listeners, is not to stand here for an hour and promote everything that the Occupy movement is doing. It's from someone who certainly falls into the 99% asking questions both pro and con. As many people have said, there is so much more media that it's hard to focus on just one. So it doesn't matter if you're the 1% who owns a likability. It seems like you fall, whoever the listener is, can find what they want to hear wherever they go, whatever they choose to do. So that still doesn't allow me to understand why, you know, those 45 to 50 people in the room who fall, you know, are part of the folks amongst the 99 who are disagreeing with what you're attempting to do. Bailey?
I personally look at it like it's a systematic failure, and you still have a lot of the population that's still desperately clinging on to the hope that the system is not failing. And maybe this sounds somewhat, I don't know how to describe it, but I feel like I woke up and I see it very clearly everywhere I look. And maybe those other 50 people in the room just haven't woken up yet. And it's not to say that they're wrong in the life that they're leading, or they're wrong in thinking that things are fine or anything like that. It's just a matter of, like, you know, if you're born into a certain situation, the system is stacked against you from day one. And so how can you say that, like, everything's fine in the world when you have people that are sleeping on the street every night? Or, you know, like, you might be okay financially, but the other guy is not. And if you have 100 people in a room together and one of them is in need, I would hope that at least half of those people would step up to try to help that person. And that's, I mean, that's basically the idea behind why I'm part of this, is that I see that there are so many people in need, and that we live in a society that's very greedy and very self-serving. And to me, that has to change if we're going to continue as a species.
We are talking with three folks from the Charlottesville group of the Occupy movement, the Charlottesville group here in our Lee Park in the city. Larry, you mentioned out in the lobby as we were meeting before the show about doing this face-to-face. That's your personal preference, is face-to-face, and I'm assuming convincing someone on your side about how that works best for everyone. So if you have a member of the 45 to 50 people who do not agree with what's happening, how do you explain that to them?
Well, I think, you know, my preference for a face-to-face dialogue is simply because, you know, when you occupy a room or a public space with one another, you know, you engage one another on a personal level. They see you as an individual. I see them as an individual. We are not separated by, you know, an invisibility that takes place like what we're doing over the radio. You know, invariably people will call in and we will speak to them, hopefully. But when you engage people face-to-face, I think that there's more of a heart exchange. You know, they see you, they see your concern, I see them, I see their concern. And the truth is, you know, most of us are not that separated from one another in terms of our opinions and our concerns.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, there's a lot of confusion in people's minds about, you know, people's particular political persuasions, their different social beliefs. A whole myriad of things comes into play when you address situations like this. So I think just being face-to-face is just a much better way to engage. And it's actually a very traditional way in this country, and that is the whole purpose of a lot of what's going on in Lee Park, is a revival of the public forum where people meet together and they address their concerns face-to-face.
But, Zach, how successful has that been? Because I would assume that many of the people who come to the park to have the dialogue and the discussion with Larry or yourself or with Bailey are already teetering. Even if they don't necessarily agree with everything that's going on, I would think that they are open enough to come down and ask rather than write the email, you know, to the newspaper, or, you know, comment, or something where they have that sense of anonymity, what the hell is the word they want. They can be anonymous by doing it that way rather than the face-to-face. So how successful have you been in those conversations?
I mean, I think you are right in the sense that the people that do come down are already, there is sort of a preconception already there that allows them to challenge their belief. But, you know, what I've been surprised about when I'm at the park is just the variety of people that are there and the variety of people that continue to come and be like, you know, for example, we had an individual and his son a few days ago, and he was saying he's a small business owner in Charlottesville and he considers himself to be in the 1%, although that was kind of a question, but he came down and he was just asking, you know, what are you guys doing here? I don't really agree with what you're doing here, but I want to come down and talk to you. And, you know, by the end of the dialogue, he kind of took away his disagreement. He realized that he actually shared a lot in common with us. And that's what I find with most people I talk to, is that when you actually have the dialogue, it humanizes both parties, and we actually come to this, like, it's, it may not be an agreement, but we kind of end up on this, yeah, it's like an understanding. And what I find with, when I read, like, the Daily Progress and people, things that I read online and the comments, it's they're not operating, they're not in the same situation, they don't have the same information, and so it allows them to say things that aren't necessarily accurate.
We've also had people come up from a standpoint of being against it. You know, I remember in the first week that we were there, there were two guys that came up at like 2 a.m. that had been drinking, and they were cussing us and stuff like that. And I walked up to them, and I introduced myself, and I said hi, and then engaged them in conversation. And it, where initially they started out, like, you know, cussing us and telling us we shouldn't be there, towards the end of the conversation being, well, like, this is pretty cool, I think I'm going to come back. And I think that that's the most important thing, is like, if you don't understand and you're seeing it from like the media's perspective and you have a lot of opinions about it, come talk to us, come see what it's about, meet people. That it's the most important thing.
11:16 here on the Wake Up Call with Zach and Bailey and Larry from the Charlottesville group of the Occupy movement. Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support during our hour. You can find them at Mead Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville. They provide custom t-shirts and sportswear plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. All right, a question for whoever wants to jump on this. What rules and regulations does the Occupy movement want to offer up to change the disparity? That's one of the biggest complaints is, okay, I understand why you're there. The 1 to 99 is a problem, but what are you going to do about it? What should we do about it?
You know, that's a really very large question when you think about it.
Then pick two things. What are the first two things that we need to do?
Well, I'll tell you. We need to have a very long and deep public conversation about the issues that face this country. Without that conversation, there can be no moving forward on any of the issues. If people refuse to engage with one another and discuss their differences, then it is not possible to formulate solutions.
Okay, understood. I would agree with that. I think the majority of the 100 people in the room would agree with that. You don't have, in fact, it doesn't matter which side you're on. If you're promoting the Occupy movement, if you're cursing it, you know, you can tell by statistics and polls, and everyone can, you know, pick their own statistic and poll that you choose to believe in. But it doesn't matter because they all say they were unhappy with what's going on in Washington, D.C. with our legislature. So it doesn't matter about the dialogue. We all want to have the dialogue, but I still didn't hear which two things we should start with dialogue.
I think that it depends on the individual that you ask within the group. The group in Charlottesville has not made a decision as to those things that we think need changing. Now, on a local level, we've started looking at, like, the homeless issue in our city. Why these people are constantly marginalized instead of actually helped in a real way. That's one thing that I'm looking at. If you ask me on a federal level, reinstate Glass-Steagall, take money out of politics, audit the Fed. Like, there are lots of things that could be done, but the problem of what's wrong in the country and what's wrong in the world is so big that there is not a simple, easy fix. There are multitudes of things that need changing.
But the broken house, the house that needs repair, you have to start somewhere, whether it's the foundation and you have to knock it down and redo the foundation, whether the foundation is fine and you need to put in a new kit. You know, something has to do the list at the top of it. And the two homeowners can, you know, disagree, but somebody has to make the choice. And if you have, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, and I've heard this from the group, and again, I have not been down to Lee Park to participate. And Rusty, I see the phone's ringing, if Rusty will get that for me. It's difficult to set the agenda if everyone says we don't have a leader, right?
Yeah, I mean, in a
and
way.
I see different discrepancy here. So, Zach, start.
Well, can I go back to your
of course.
Well, I think what we're trying to say is, like, what we don't have right now is this national dialogue of everyone voicing the perspective and what kind of life they're experiencing, because that is really going to shape how we're going to move forward and what kind of issues exactly that we need to fix. And I just, even in the way that you asked the question, you had to resort to like the house comparison. You couldn't ask in specifics. It's just kind of showing how difficult and how actually like eclectic this kind of this information is. You know, you almost have to be, you study these things every day to speak about it in that kind of way. And what was your, sorry.
Well, I wanted to know if you can actually get to the list if you don't have a leader. And you said you shook your head yes, and Bailey shook her head no.
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on the process that you use to get there. Without the leader aspect, I mean, at first, a month ago, when I went to Lead Park, I was kind of doubting, you know, what's going to happen. There's no one leading. That doesn't make sense. But it's also because I was very unfamiliar with the consensus process and this kind of group procedure. And so what I've learned in my experience, it's short, though. It's been a few weeks only. But I still feel like I've taken out of this that what the process does is it instills this internal agency in each of us. And it kind of puts us all together in this sort of group cohesion in which we lead together. And you don't really need a one leader to tell everyone what to do. Everyone more just comes together and everyone hears their opinion and voice and concern.
All right, 11:21 on the wake-up call. Caller, hang on just a second. I need to do this. The markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. It's mostly cloudy with about 20% chance of showers today. A little more sun in Richmond. Highs in the upper 60s. Mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers tonight. Low 50 to 55. And then cloudy tomorrow with a 50% chance of showers. Highs 60 to 65. Right now it's a pretty nice day out there. 60 in the valley, 62 in Lynchburg, 65 in Richmond, and 61 here in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
All right. We are talking with three folks from the Charlottesville movement of Charlottesville group from the Occupy movement. We have Bailey, Zach, and Larry. And we also have a caller. Dun-ta-da. Caller, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
All right. Question or comment for our three guests?
Just a comment. I just think you ought to talk about the amount of money that people are investing in their IRAs that's going to Wall Street, which is essentially, you know, a huge amount of money, and also essentially the concept of people using their money as a weapon against the things they don't believe in. Thank you.
All right. Who wants to jump on that?
So I think what the caller just pointed out really is this is trust. And that actually is one of our core values that we have. And it's the idea that he's talking about Roth IRAs, so that you as an individual take your hard-earned money and you put it into a retirement account for later use. And you trust that money to an investment firm, you know, that supposedly promises you that, you know, you can get more in the future. And what we saw in the last few years is that didn't really happen, that the money that was entrusted to these groups was misused and even used against people, you know, with hedge funds and the insurance taken out against mortgages.
You know, one of the things that's really at issue is just the whole nature of investment. You know, investment is largely a speculative venture. It's also a system that's being gamed more and more by people who participate in that particular system. There are people who invest in these derivatives. They promote these particular derivatives in various forms of stock holdings. and then they actively bet against him. And there are people who have literally made billions of dollars betting on the failure of these particular instruments. That's a crime.
But, well, I'm going to disagree with you there, because if you go to the casino, you can bet and play craps. You can bet on the guy rolling the dice to roll a 7 and be a winner, or to roll, a 2, a 3, or and lose. And the people who bet against the guy with the dice are always sort of shunned, but it's still a way to play the game. And I can see where you're coming from, Larry, because what you're saying is the people who have your money shouldn't bet against, you know, the guy who gave it to you to lose. I shouldn't take Larry's money and then bet that I'm going to lose it for you. That should be the crime. But I should be able to vote that Zach loses if I don't have his money. Why can't I take your money and the income, the speculation, be that the guys over here in the other house are going to lose?
I think what it boils down to is that you're betting against people. These aren't numbers, you know? Like, when you look at the fact that, like, you have, like, the collapse in 08, right, that was caused by irresponsible lending to people that really probably shouldn't have had loans in the first place, and then you have those banks betting against those people, saying that they will fail, and then those bankers make tons of money on the failure of those people to pay their mortgages. And then you have the mess that we're in now. The fact that those guys aren't in jail is a travesty.
Well, I won't disagree with you there. Hang on, we got a caller. And we have Nancy. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
I'm well. Question?
Hi, Nancy.
Question or comment for our guest?
Larry Bailey, you're doing good. But, Rick, I wanted to comment on something you said earlier about something specific that the Occupy movement as a whole has talked about as far as change, and that is serious campaign finance reform. Until we have two political parties in this country, one is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Koch brothers, the other one, you know, plays footsie with the rest of the 1%. And so you might vote, you know, people say vote somebody in to make changes. Well, you vote them in and they get corrupted by the current system. You really haven't accomplished anything. So that's one of the things that I see as far as, you know, participating with Occupy Charlottesville and reading, is that until we get some, you know, until we can repeal the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, hopefully through a constitutional amendment, we're still going to have the same systemic problems. Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy. Although, you know, what I will say is on that, and then move on to some other questions. By the way, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. If you need to use the toll-free, that's 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS or 979-0919. Is there, you know, we can change the system, but the Supreme Court just allowed money to, you know, be to go anywhere you want, from anywhere you want. It used to be that, which I think makes for horrible campaign. And there's George Soros also controls the Democratic Party. Let's not talk about one party, not the other, as to who controls which. You know, one of the things that I find is I don't understand why, when again, we go back to that metaphor that I was using earlier about the 100 people in the room and the 99, why aren't they working together? Because we have the Tea Party, who to me is, at least in the matter of reform, has similar desires, and yet will not have anything to do with you. And one of the concepts that was brought up to me is because you don't combine the interests, because that's not how our culture works. There's only one winner. This is not, you play the game of risk. And I used to play that as a lot. I don't know that anybody plays it anymore, where teams can work together to get rid of one group, but then you can't work together anymore because now one of you has to beat the other. If any of you watch Survivor on television, you can put your groups together, but then in the end you have to eat each other because there's only one winner. And does that culture make the Occupy movement eventually to fail?
I don't think so, not at all, because a lot of what we're about is really redefining the system. You know, if it's a dog-eat-dog, he who takes all wins, what does that say about our society?
Exactly.
You know?
But it said that for however many 270, 250 years, however long since 1776, I can't do the math. I mean, the American culture has always been that way, has it not?
I don't think so.
I think we need a paradigm change. I mean, that's...
You know, I think there was a time in this country where, because of the size of communities, there was a greater degree of interconnectedness. People felt a greater sense of responsibility for one another. And because of that, they helped one another to a greater degree than what we experience now. We're a very large nation. It's over 300 million people. And we've kind of adopted that, you know, every man for himself, pull yourselves up by your own bootstraps, you know, he who dies with the most toys wins, that whole kind of mentality. And that is very much about the individual. It is not about communities.
And it's part of the neoliberalist ideology that is pretty recent. I mean, throughout the however many thousands of years that humans have survived on this world, you have seen a very pervasive, you've seen that there's been procedures in each society to take care of those that are not as, I guess, elite or as strong. So you've seen for the elderly that we've had ways to, you know, help them, and with the poor we have ways to help them, and we have those now. But what happens when you get rid of those? What's going to happen to those people? That's kind of...
All right, let's take our call from Charles. Hey, Charles.
Good morning.
Good morning. Question or comment for our guests, Zach and Bailey and Larry?
Really just a comment in general. The last caller, Nancy, talked about the, you know, money and politics, and really to try to kind of give the big picture and you know, tie it together. I mean, the thing, the 99% and the 1%, you know, the 1% controls the vast majority of wealth in this country. You know, I know there's numbers out there. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe you have that information, Rick. But the thing is that when you have all that money, then you have the ability to influence politicians. And I think that's where the problem lies, is that our politicians aren't really representing their constituents. Mm-hmm. They're representing the 1%.
Well, Charles, I would agree with you completely. You know, people talk about corruption, and it's always, if you're Republican, the corruption is in the Democratic side, and if you're a Democrat, the corruption is on the Republican side. But it seems to me what it really is, that it's not, you know, a corrupt 50% versus a non. It's that politicians no longer vote for their own beliefs or what they believe would be best for their community that they're there to represent. It's best for those who influence them with their financial donations.
Absolutely. I mean, and not to mention that, I mean, within Congress, within, the House of Representatives, you know, and the Senate, there's a number of them are the 1% themselves. They're wealthy lawyers.
Good point. Thanks, Charles.
And I understand that we are a country of laws, but still I go back to what I was saying about, you know, our representatives representing us. And I think that a lot of people in this country have gotten so frustrated about it that, you know, a lot of them have given up, you know, and that's, you know, that's really sad.
Thanks. Thanks for the phone call.
Yes, sir.
Bailey, you wanted to make a point?
Yeah. I think that there's a lot of confusion going on in the media and just in general about what, like, the movement wants as far as politics goes. And from what I can tell, we just want to be left alone so that we can figure out how to do this. It's very, very obvious to most of us, regardless of where you are in the political spectrum, that the system is broken, that the Democratic Party doesn't represent people, the Republican Party doesn't represent people. They represent finance. And it even comes down to a local level where you've got, you know, if you ask the majority of the public of Charlottesville, how they feel about Nestle funding their water supply study, I bet most people would probably be against that. But then, you know, it's still allowed to happen because Nestle has a ton of money.
Well, I want to get back to that point. I got a call coming in. But I think many people would also say that this area only represented the Occupy movement with some of the decisions that were made. And I definitely want to include that. It's 11:35 on the wake-up call. We have three folks from the Charlottesville group of the Occupy movement. I need to take a moment to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, where your happiness is their priority. At Blue Ridge, you can return gear and apparel purchases at any time for any reason. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road here in Charlottesville and at three locations in Richmond. For more store information, it's brms.com. All right, and I see where that caller didn't want to wait. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's the toll-free number. And to get back to that, Bailey, you're talking about Nestle and the water supply. But many people would say, again, we go back to that metaphor I was using about 100 people in the room. Why aren't the 99% all together on the one guy having all the power and finances? But many people have said, why are the folks in this Occupy movement being allowed? Why are new rules being offered? Homeless people can't stay in the park. Why are the Occupy folks being allowed to stay in the park? The policy or the permit was moved from 3 days to 3 weeks to, you know, now we're talking about it's not today, but it's going to be after Thanksgiving or shortly after Thanksgiving. And so I don't understand why the Charlottesville City Council has made changes, set new precedents for this group and for these beliefs. Who wants that one?
I think it's a good question. I mean, I understand. I'm assuming that you're mainly speaking of the Tea Party's problems with us and City Council.
Well, I would say that while the Tea Party has been the most vocal,
right,
and the most obvious, that there are other people out there. Again, I believe in the majority. I have faith in the goals, the initial movement of what the Occupy group is trying to do. You never become more socialist than when you're unemployed. But when the news came out that Charlottesville City Council was going to allow the group to spend the night in the park, I said, oh, that's a crappy precedent to be setting, because now the people who I don't agree with are going to be arguing, and that's exactly what happened.
But see, the issue is that the city has no right to control who is and who is not allowed to express themselves under the Constitution.
It doesn't mean you have to be able to stay in the park overnight. And set the precedent for other people, make people unsafe.
But that is our right. And you have to look at the fact that, okay, so the issue is that we broke curfew. For the first 3 days that we were there, the city let us be there without a permit. And when we went to council to ask them for the permit, or for the ability to lift the curfew was what we asked for. They said, we want you to get a permit because if we lift the curfew for you guys, then if somebody like the Tea Party comes along, blah, 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 right? And I, as much as, like, there are lots of things that I disagree with in the Tea Party, there are also things that I do very strongly agree with in the Tea Party. I felt, as the Tea Party felt, that that was wrong for the city to make that call. Because the city has no right to say who is allowed to say something and who is not, right? And in that way, they have been unfair. But at the same time, in my personal opinion, the Tea Party and us, none of us should have to have permits to express ourselves. Why do you have to obey a law or get like a permit to have your rights?
I think that's a great point. Thank you. 11:39 on the wake-up call. Let me do this. Gary, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Can you hold on for a second and let me do a little work, and I'll be right back to you.
Sure.
All right. 11:39 on the wake up call, talking about the Charlottesville group of the Occupy movement.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, Charlottesville's 18-month JPA bridge project may be an inconvenience for drivers, but it could put some businesses out of business in that area. Owners say not enough has been done to help them during this project, and Dirty Nellies and others survive. A mother is charged in an accident that actually kills her daughter and her ex-husband. And is it truly possible for anyone to avoid plagiarism? The Hook. Look no further. The Hook is here. And let me thank L. Oppelman's. They are Central Virginia's complete music headquarters, continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department is now featuring acoustic guitars, banjos, mandolins, and violins, as well as electric guitar packages and complete drum sets. That's L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street, Lynchburg, and at loppelman.com. And before I get to Gary, I want to tell everybody if the WNRN and Wake Up Call are looking for a second producer for the show. If you have an interest in the program, you're available to work the occasional Sunday, and have a basic ability with computers, we can teach you the rest. Email us at rmoore@wnrn.org or stop by the station. All right, again, we are talking with Larry, Zach, and Bailey about the Occupy movement. And we have Gary. Hey, Gary.
Good morning.
And question or comment for the group?
A comment and a question, and then I'll get off the line and just listen. My comment is that I have yet to hear any of the three guests articulate in any way other than generalities, such as the system is broken, what it is that is wrong, number one. Number two, here's the question. The question is, what would the United States look like and act like if it met the expectations that the Occupy group is trying to put forward? And I'll hang up the
mic. All right. Larry, I know you've got to go soon. I want to get your feedback on that real quick.
Well, do we want to address the question or the comment?
You take your pick, and then I'll let Zach and Bailey take the other half.
Well, I will address the part of what would this country look like should the Occupy movement, quote-unquote, get its way. I think overall that we would probably have a more benevolent society where people cared about each other more, where there was a greater sense of community and a greater participation in that community by all the individual members of the community. I think that's one of the very strong goals that I know I personally would like to see come out of this movement, and I think most of the other participants in this movement have that same kind of a goal in mind, is we would like to see a more benevolent society. We would like to see stronger ties on, an individual level and also on a community level, to where people feel included, that people don't feel marginalized, but that they actually feel like they are part of their community and have a place.
All right. Zach, Bailey?
Yeah. I mean, to get a little more specific, I guess, to help this gentleman out, what I see in this, in our locality in Charlottesville, is a 20% poverty rate and growing, and more and more homeless people every day. I mean, the Orange Dot Project that was connected by the city of Charlottesville was released, I think, a few months ago, and it's pointing out that Charlottesville has a very big problem with poverty, and it's not going away. And it's not just here, it's across the entire country. And what you see when you have large and widespread poverty is it affects people's education, which then is like a feedback loop, and it affects the way they live their life for the rest of their, for the rest of their existence. And so it's a barrier, it's a limitation that prevents them from being productive members of society. Not to say if you are poor that you're not a product, I don't want to say that at all. I just mean that without the wealth or income, it kind of will make life maybe more difficult, and even to the point where it will restrict you from doing certain things. And in Charlottesville's case, I think it's particular individuals from being a part of the community and being disenfranchised from politics.
Well, I think for a lot of us here in Charlottesville specifically, it's the first time in our lives we've ever felt a real sense of community ever. I mean, there's one person that I can think of off the top of my head that before this all started, I mean, this guy grew up in and out of the prison system and has been arrested 2 or 3 times a week for months before this started. And now that we've been there for 5 weeks, this man hasn't been arrested once. And it's not because his behavior is being hidden in a tent. It's not because of anything like that. It's that for the first time in his life, he's not being marginalized by people. For the first time in his life, he feels like people care about him and are listening to him. And this is a person that didn't know that he had the ability to speak to city council. Like, how that can even exist is ridiculous. And so, yeah.
11:45 on the wake-up call. Our guests today, Larry and Bailey and Zach from the Charlottesville group of the Occupy Movement. Phone lines are open if you'd like to make a call, a comment, a question. 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Bailey, I want to talk to that. You're always judged. You're always judged by your worst elements. And so when the people who are against the 40-plus people who are against the Occupy movement read about something bad that happened at the park, it's always, see, that's what happens. When you talk about the one member of the Charlottesville Occupy movement who hasn't been arrested for 5 weeks, they don't pay attention to the part that says this person has now been able, he understands that he can participate by going to the Charlottesville City Council or find other ways. I know you have a library there and other methods of, as Larry mentioned earlier, having a face-to-face dialogue, and that he can participate in that regardless of which side he may choose to stand on. But it's the worst elements that people jump on at first, and it doesn't matter where you stand. The person from the Tea Party who you see stand there, you know, waving their gun and saying, you know, Obama should be killed, is how you judge the Tea Party. So how do you get the people who aren't living up to the standards for the Occupy movement and get them so that they are not marginalized by the movement itself?
You don't assert leadership over them. You I mean, the way that I've seen it work in the park, when we first came in, it was really stressful. Because we didn't know each other. And so, like, when so-and-so uses their loud voice, it's like, is he starting a fight? And now it's gotten to a point where we all accept responsibility for each other, and that if one of us is like, you know, if there's an argument going down, that we're all going to back each other up and say, hey, this can't happen here, because in this space we are peaceful. In this space we are respectful towards everybody. For every reason. And in this space, like, you calling your girlfriend names isn't cool. In this space, you hitting that guy isn't cool. And in the beginning, we had these people that didn't get that. But now that they've been there for a while, they're not a problem because they're policing themselves. They don't need an authority to tell them to be or to not be a certain way, because they've now been given the power to do it themselves.
Larry, do you agree with that?
Yeah, that's actually a very important aspect of a true working community, is that the community, through its cohesion, exerts a power that isn't based on particular authority figures, but it's based on a consensus of behavior. And people who find themselves acting up outside of that consensus generally start to feel uncomfortable, and they soon find that it's really in their best interest to police themselves, just as Bailey said.
11:49 on the Wake Up Call as we talk about the Charlottesville group from the Occupy movement. I see the phone ringing now, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. Support today is also coming from The Backyard, that is UVA Corner's culinary secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. Backyard has a seasonal menu. They have daily specials and a rotating list of beers on tap. Backyard is now open on Sundays, serving brunch, then a pub food menu until close. For more information, it's 434-202-8215, backyarduva.com, and they have a Facebook page. 10 minutes left. Call us up if you'd like, 979-0919. And then at noon, it's Drew Thompson with Les Temps Purdue, best of 80s and 90s alternative. He'll have Kate Bush, Urge Overkill, World Party. Brought to you in part by Caliente. Requests always welcome on Les Temps Purdue. And Steve, are you with me?
I am.
Question, comment for the group.
Question and comment. I've heard it said, this comment, not on your show, but I've heard it in the past, the rich are getting richer. You know, they have found a path to wealth. Do you think they should seek a path to poverty? And that's one. Another is, if you want what they have, do what they do. And also, I'll make a comment. You mentioned that the system is failing, maybe because of who you elected, and that's all I have.
Thanks, man. Go at it, Zach.
I guess to respond to that, I don't really... Like, I don't look at what they have and want it. I also don't really want to engage myself in that kind of activity that exploits and violates people. Because I really think the most important thing in what we're doing here is reestablishing a community. Because what I feel has happened in the last, 30 or so years is there's been this push there's all these different reasons why, and with technology, to isolate ourselves, we've kind of pushed ourselves in this little daily me box where you were saying earlier, Rick, that people, you can go anywhere and find information that will tailor to exactly what you agree with. And I kind of fear that's part of the problem, is that we don't receive a diversity of opinions anymore, and we don't receive a diversity of people. And that's what a community was before. And when I was a little kid, we used to say the United States was the melting pot, where all different people could come and you'd each have a different background and they would, come to some kind of compromise. And I don't see that anymore. And I really feel like that's what we're doing in Lee Park, is pulling that, kind of going back to our traditional roots to have those dialogues where we can really understand each other, like where you can hear each other's perspective and how you're living your life. And I really feel like that's important. If you can't relate to people, if you're not connected through those bonds, then I don't know. I just don't see, much of a point.
I don't know that this is the way Steve asked it, but I want to get it back up. He said there's about the path to poverty. Are there certain things that people do that lead them down a path to poverty?
But what about when you're born into it?
Well, this program has had a handful of shows just in this year about the large percentage of people who suffer that, the number of people who actually are on the verge, just barely above poverty if they lose their job or have large medical expense. But if you are, it looks to me, and I'm guessing, that the four of us were not born into the path to poverty. You, Bailey?
Yeah.
So how do you get out of it?
I'm not out of it.
Are there other ways to do that?
I mean, there's this idea.
Without trampling on everyone else. Because I think that's one of the things that the occupation movement says, is you can't trample on everybody else to get to the 1%.
Right. I personally have no interest in being rich. I just want to be able to get by. I want to be able to have a meal and a place to sleep every night, and really that's all I want. And maybe it's really simple, and maybe, I'm not as, I don't know what the right word is, gung-ho about it. But But to me, like, material possessions and having a bunch of money isn't what life is about. And I understand that there are other people that feel that that's what fills their void. And like, they're more than welcome to try to do that. But when it takes away from other people, that's when I think it's wrong.
All right, 11:55. I do have one call, and then I have a couple questions I want to make sure I get to. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. And we have Nancy. Hi, Nancy.
Hi again. Thank you for taking my call. I kind of want to respond to the previous caller who wanted to talk about rich and path to poverty and explain to him again what the 99% is about. We've got people out here that are scared that they can't pay the next month's rent. I know people that go to work sick. I mean, really sick, because they don't have insurance, or they can't afford a doctor bill if they go. We have people out here that work two jobs. We've got people out here that buy store brands to cut costs, to cut corners. But then when they get in trouble, they're told that you didn't plan well. You know, you should work harder. You know, things like you made poor choices, kind of like what the other commentator was talking about. So we get told that it's all your fault, but yet when Wall Street needed help, they get bailed out, and they're called a job creator, you know. And when the American public needs help, we are called entitled whiners, crybabies. So I think that, you know, that's the connect to make, that there are people out here working really, really hard and still struggling, and they're, you know, they're called entitled because, you know, they need a little help, you know, like this, say, for example, Louisa County with the recent earthquake, where their representative, Eric Cantor, basically turned his back on his constituents, so, because they were whining, they were feeling entitled.
Well, Eric Cantor's a jerk.
That's my comment.
All right, I probably shouldn't have said that. anyway, I'm sorry, that just popped out. That was highly inappropriate. I should have said that off air. All right, so two quick questions to finish up with. What do you do for the winter? I mean, people have been camping out. We're assuming that the parks in many places are going to be closed down, if not for weather, because the politicians have done so, as they did in Oakland and Portland and other places, and your permit has been told that it will not be extended. So what does the group do in the winter to keep teaching people who they feel they need to reach?
Well, I mean, it depends on the person you're asking.
Well, we're starting with you, since you responded first.
Personally, I plan on doing more volunteer work at the Haven. There are a group of us that have been talking about opening up a free school. I'm also thinking about just joining and living with the homeless population to try to learn more about how they're treated within the city, and to basically organize a group of people that have been severely marginalized and told that they're worthless.
All right, Zach?
I mean, well, I think your question also, you'll see that even though the cities did temporarily try to close down, you know, the Occupy movement, what you'll see is a backlash by the wherever that happens in that locality. And so they tried to evict New York City, and they're back in Zuccotti Park. Or they tried to evict them in Oakland, and they're back with three times the numbers. Like, this movement isn't going away. It's only getting bigger.
Larry, there was a reported fraction between the Charlottesville movement. Comment on that?
Well, you're speaking about basically the opinion of one particular individual who, for reasons known mostly to himself, you know, felt that for whatever reason there were quote-unquote secret meetings and small groups within the group that were seeking to take this particular chapter of the Occupy movement in a direction more anarchistic in nature, and were people who wanted to act out in ways that might have led to violence. That basically was untrue.
So you're saying that person was not representing the rest
absolutely
of the group?
Absolutely not.
And just managed to get a little bit of media
absolutely not
report on that.
All right. Thank the three of you for coming in today, Zach and Bailey and Larry. We were talking about the Charlottesville group of the Occupy movement. I hope those who listened, we will have the show up on a podcast site, probably not today, but hopefully later in the week.
Can I just add one thing before you close out?
Real quick, because Drew's waiting.
We have a city council hearing tomorrow at 7 p.m. We're asking that people show up wearing red in solidarity. If you think that we have the right to do this, whether you agree with the way we do it or not, please come support it. Have your voice heard. It's an open forum.
All right. Next week, we'll be doing a show on agritourism, how Nelson County is working things for wine and beer to come down and get tourism, to come down and see the home stuff. Thanks so much.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.